Okay. So basically, McGraw-Nickel is a boutique advisory firm. We specialize in corporate advisory, forensic services, forensic transaction services, and corporate recovery. We are a private partnership. We've got 30 partners and roughly around about 300 staff across the region. We got offices in all the major cities, including New Zealand, and we consider ourselves to be a lead in our area of expertise. In simple words, basically, all the service land, what do we do? We look after businesses like cotton farms. You're probably familiar with Kabi Station. We also ran the receivership for childcare center, ABC. And on top of that, we do things like fraud investigation. So in simple words, what we do is basically we help businesses run it well. We help the banks actually go and assist in a business that's not doing so well. And we also go and do fraud investigation if things are not looking good on the balance sheet. I think the major challenge for us is from a business perspective is actually how can we provide the information to people in a secure manner while giving them the freedom to do whatever they want to do. I think that's the key thing for us. So freedom meaning mobility, use of laptops or tablets, whether it's in-house laptops or tablets or whether it's their own device. And given that we are a mobile staff, how do we actually provide connectivity? So that's pretty much the key thing for us. But in simple words, what we want to try and do is to actually make life easy for people, or they don't have to think about technology when they're actually doing their job. So, excuse me. So day in the McGraw-Nickel office looks like this. This is actually pictures from the Kabi Station. So shows the remoteness of the work that we do. Another day in the McGraw-Nickel office, this is actually a fraud investigation we did in Congo. So the picture that I'm trying to paint is that our staff are highly mobile. They can work from anywhere in the world, and we need to make sure that we have solutions in place that will accommodate those requirements. So I will talk a little bit about McGraw-Nickel IT or the information engine. So we are very simple when it comes to IT. We run a very tight ship in the sense of who we work with and the solutions we implement. We roughly got about 13 full-time staff and 5 contractors. So our whole IT strategy is built around 4 wheels, if you like. So we got Telstra from a services perspective that covers mobile phones, wide area networks, landlines, anything to do with communications, we actually select Telstra. We use HP for all our laptops, all our printers, all our servers. We go up to the extent of actually using HP racks. Then Cisco for all network gear. And then we have got Microsoft looking after our application stack. So we use SharePoint, Windows 8, Hyper-V, anything to do with Microsoft, we use in our environment. So the idea behind this is actually for us to work with leaders in the industry, and we clearly believe that the 4 vendors that we have selected are leaders in the industry. Beyond that, the other reasons is that having this single vendor strategy from an IT perspective gives us the ability to actually have one throat to choke support policy. So if something is not working, we really don't have to look at number of vendors. We just focus on single vendor, go and have a conversation why it's working or why it's not working. The other part is relationship. We are relatively a small organization. Having a single vendor policy allows us to actually manage relationships much better because everybody wants to work with you given that you've got the loyalty to work with them. Second part is ease of early adoption. People like Microsoft, HP, spend a significant amount of money in their research and doing the testing. So our idea is actually when you have to bring a solution in, we don't actually have to go to the nth degree of testing given that our environment is simple and the stacks, software stacks we are using is from the single window. So that makes it easy for us. Early adoption, hence, is really a key for us in actually trying to identify a business edge over the rest. And the next part is cost saving. So jumping into the early adoption part, one of the things that we also see it is that being part of the early adoption gives us the ability to actually work with other vendors to actually do significant cost saving. And the reason that is all the vendors are keen to get the product into the market. So we can actually work with them to bring the solution into the market. And if 3 people are working, gives us the ability to actually split the cost and get the solution working. From a business perspective, the key for us is actually look for that little bit of additional technology, if you like. Picking Windows 8 as an example, direct access. Picking Windows Server 2008, performance. So there are a number of advantages we have got, but I'll leave that for a little bit later on. And from an IT perspective, another key part for us is actually having the latest technology allows us to actually retain good staff and bring in new staff. As we all know, we like to play with the latest toy. From a business perspective, they like to be cool. So it gives us the ability to actually bring these new technologies and work in our environment efficiently. The next part is actually working in this space of early adapter gives us the ability to actually be an incubator for people like HP and Microsoft. So what does that mean? What it means is that when you actually bring a product into the market, sometimes there are holes, we all know that. But come up with the idea to say that, okay, this is how you fix the issue that we have. That helps us actually to give our view and make sure the solution is related to us, which can actually allow all the customers out there. So they are the few reasons that we actually drive the technology strategy that we are driving, look to be early adapters, and from a business perspective, the advantage that we can get. So the next key thing for us is what actually drives the business and what are the key things that is important for us. So if you actually have a look at the picture that I have got up there, the first part is risk management. Given that we have got significant amount of remote staff, our key is actually how do we actually manage the information risk? Because at the end of the day, a lot of people travel. They carry laptops. They carry iPad. They carry mobile devices. Doesn't matter what device it is. At the end of the day, from a business perspective, we need to try and understand what we are trying to protect. So what we are trying to protect is the intellectual property. The next part is that all of us know very well is the cost management. So how can we actually implement solutions that is actually cost efficient? Other part is actually how can we look for efficiencies, if you like? How can we actually save time for people so that they can actually start focusing on their job? And the third and the fourth part is pretty much lifecycle maintenance. So we don't want to be behind the ball game. There's a lot of reasons why we shouldn't be. So focus on the lifecycle management. So after giving the background, I just want to give you a clear picture of the business and paint the story why we actually took the solution we have implemented and the reasonings behind it. So as the time goes on, you'll get a little bit of clearer picture. So I will actually pass it on to John Fahey, who is our technology manager, to give you an understanding of our thinking behind the solutions that we came up with. So, John.
Thanks, Ron. Hi, guys. I'll give you a little bit of a background of our infrastructure and how we run the business. Windows Server 2012 on the hybrid cloud is just the next transition for us. We started off in 2008 with the RDP program with Microsoft to virtualize our entire environment on the Windows 2008 Gen 1 version of Hyper-V. We ran that on server core. We didn't have any PowerShell. And for most of the management of that environment, we used the Hyper-V, the actual console, and failover cluster management. To be honest with you, it was a bit of a steep learning curve, but we successfully ran the business on that with all of our virtual machines, right down to our Exchange, and we even started to virtualize SQL in that environment as well. When 2008 R2 came out, or should I say, on 2008 Core, on one of our production servers, we had over 50 mount points. So trying to manage that environment was pretty intensive. With 2008 R2, when we got cluster shared volumes, and I guess you could say we're probably still running that in our environment today. We've recently done all of our SharePoint 2010 in it, and we've upgraded to SQL 2008 R2. We do all of our link, we do our DMZ. We've got everything virtualized on these environments. A typical scenario that we would have is the HP Gen 8 servers. We like the BL460s. We pack them out with as much RAM as we possibly can, and we run everything off our EVA P6500 SAN. We get about 30,000 IOPS out of that. We started to do the 2008 RDP with four servers that we got from HP. We set them up as two different clusters, and we put a bunch of our production machines onto one of those clusters and replicated them to the other cluster. I got that idea, I guess, from the lock note of TechEd last year when we had Jeff just giving us some of the highlights of what Server 2012 would actually bring. And I can remember going back to Sharan saying, we've got our DR solution. We can replicate our entire virtual environment to another data center. So we started to go down the path, really, of looking at co-location. We went out to visit some other data centers in the Melbourne area. We looked at rack space. We spoke to HP about buying some 3-power SANs, looking at new blade enclosures, SAN structures, and getting a fat pipe between our data center in South Bank out to Port Melbourne. And we were at the point of where we were saying, you know, we're going to do this. This is going to be our DR solution. Until we got asked to be involved in the Azure infrastructure as a service in the Microsoft Cloud. Joel is going to go through in detail with how we actually set it up and how we did it. But we're really changing our mind now a little bit about how much money we're going to spend on DR. And the thing about DR is that we don't have it today. We're pretty lean IT organization. So to do DR, to have a DR member of staff, to have somebody who's going to test the operations of it, to test the effectiveness of it, to do DR failovers was something that we didn't want to do. So we're looking at now of moving and migrating some of our servers into the Azure cloud. We are talking to Microsoft and the premier field engineers about trying to put our direct access infrastructure into the Azure cloud. So we've got this idea or this concept that we might be able to bring people from our network when they're inside in our LAN. When they leave, we'll bring them into the direct access, but in the Azure cloud. If they, while they're there, they can consume any services that we have there. We'll do their exchange. We can do link. With SQL 2012, we can do geo-clustering, and we'd really only bring them back into our network for a service that wasn't in the cloud. So as I said, that's what our plan is to do with that. We will, of course, be using SCVMM to manage both of the environments seamlessly. We've been using SCVMM to manage our 2008 R2 environment, and although it's a little bit better than the failover cluster manager, we've got things like maintenance mode to put servers into maintenance mode to do patching and that kind of stuff. So the Windows 2012, Server 2012 will make that process a lot easier for us. So that's a little bit of a nutshell of what we have in our environment. I'll take questions on it later on when we do question time on that. But I think at this point now we're going to look at, or Sharan's going to tell you a little bit about this structure and how we're going to develop in the cloud on a small scale and then build it out should we need to. And then Joel's going to take you through how we built it.
Thank you, John. So look, when John came up with the idea of this integrated environment, I think it was a great opportunity for us to actually rethink or redefine the way how we think about IT. So he briefly spoke about the options we had. So just to give you a comparison side of things, the option that we were thinking in at that point in time was to actually build a whole new data center or a small version of the data center to replicate our environment. As you can imagine, there's significant cost associated with it. The other advantage is I like to call this JIT term that I found out, which is just-in-time approach. So rather than building a whole data center, when we actually had a look at the Azure Cloud and Windows 2012, what we realized is that we can actually build a minimal template in the cloud, integrate the cloud into our Magranical environment to make it look like one, irrespective of where the services are coming from, and then as need basis or just in time, expand it when we need it in the disaster recovery process or whatever the situation might be. So the greater the advantage for us from with that sort of solution is the significant cost savings. We don't have to go and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. We can actually start very small, just in time expansions when we require it. The other component that is significantly important for us was that the ability to actually have VM layer replication. Now, keeping in mind that the reason that this is redefining IT for us is that our strategy, coming back to the original strategy of Microsoft being our software vendor and the other vendors providing this additional services. And also, from a performance perspective, relating back to the four key things that we are looking at from a business perspective, the extra CPU and the memory allocation that we can get with Windows 2012. So all of these things tied in together perfectly. It was perfect timing for us from a business perspective to have a look at the CloudBlaze integrated Azure solution with Windows 2012. So we got a lot of respect for that solution, and we think it's going to work for us, and the components that so far we have implemented works very well for us. But the other key thing I want to actually highlight is that these ideas are great, but there's another key component that you need to actually have to make it work, and that is actually working with the right partner. So you have got all the opportunity in the world to come up with great ideas. The technology, in most cases, does 80% of the work that you want to do. But if you really don't have a good partner to work with, so the solution is as good as not having it. So after saying that, I'm going to introduce you to Joel, who was the consultant actually who worked on implementing our solution, and probably go through some of the lessons learned and experiences we have over the period.
Joel. Hi, everyone. I'm Joel from Cloud Solutions in Melbourne, and I've been working with Sharan and John for the last few weeks to help them put together a system that's going to demonstrate what they can do on Windows Azure using the infrastructure as a service platform. And ultimately, we had to identify something that was going to show off what they could do, and we settled on SharePoint and SQL Server and integrating that with their on-premises LAN. So in order to do that, we had to set up Windows Azure and integrate that using the new virtual networking technologies that are available. And that allowed us to set up a VPN from McGraw-Nickel into the Azure cloud. And we could present the Azure cloud as an extension of the McGraw-Nickel network. So people could seamlessly access SharePoint services from within the LAN or externally on the internet. So when you're planning to take advantage of the new features, there's still a number of things that you have to consider. The virtual machine roles are still in preview, so that means that you can only access the new virtual machine offering through signing up to the Windows Azure 90-day trial. That'll give you about 750 small compute hours, so that'll get you up and running and let you try out the service. So once you've got that up and running, the next thing you have to do is set up networking. There's a number of things you have to consider on that front. The virtual machines that you get come with a single NIC and a single IP address. These are assigned by DHCP from the Windows Azure DHCP service. And what that means is that you actually get a persistent IP for the life of the VM. That will ultimately mean that you can restart and shut down those virtual machines, and you will retain that public IP, that private IP address, which will be mapped to a public IP address. There are some implications around only having a single NIC and only being able to have a single IP address. Basically means that traditional things like failover clustering aren't going to work in the same way that you normally would use them. Basically, you can't have a floating IP address that's going to go between the two nodes. And your use cases are going to be impacted in some respects. So something like a linkage server is not going to work out in the Azure cloud. And you could use TMG out there, but you're not going to have multiple not going to be able to have multiple web listeners because you've only got one IP address and you're not going to be able to assign other ports. So another consideration is storage. Sorry, I'll go back to broadcast network traffic. It's basically broadcast network traffic for security reasons is disabled. So that prevents other people being public infrastructure from doing any kind of packet sniffing or seeing what other traffic is going across the network. What that rules out is DHCP and network load balancing using the built-in Windows functionality. And there are alternatives within the Azure service that will take over that functionality. So you still have that functionality. On the storage front, the new VM virtual machine role has persistent storage now, and you also have the ability to turn off write caching. So that opens up your ability to be able to install things like SQL Server, Active Directory, and any other kind of transactional database. So when you are installing something like SQL Server, because you don't have that failover clustering options available to you, you'll be able to, for high availability, you'll have to use something like mirroring. And if you're looking for a DR solution, you can take advantage of log shipping or the new geo replication functionality within Windows Azure. So you can have, if you choose to enable geo replication, you will have multiple instances across different data centers. So in order to go through how we actually set up the environment for McGranicle, step through these things. We established Windows Azure as a service, and the first step here is to get your virtual network configured. So once you configure your virtual network, that will actually give you the configuration settings you need in order to be able to configure your firewalls and your on-premises environment. In order to establish a virtual gateway, you'll need to set up all the virtual networking components, such as what subnetting you're going to be using, what networks, and essentially configure those services so that your hosts on the environment will be able to get a DHCP address from the Azure DHCP service. Once you've got the gateway established, you have to be careful that you don't need to make any more changes to the virtual networking configuration, because it essentially locks out the functionality being able to change that. So you can add additional subnets, but you won't be able to change the ranges that you're using. If you do need to change them, it means that you will have to unconfigure the VPN gateway. And you may also need to remove the VMs that you've already created. When you re-establish that gateway, it will assign you a new IP address. So when you're configuring your VPN, you're going to need to give them a new VPN endpoint for your firewall configuration, as well as a new private key. When you are configuring your VPN and thinking about your network planning, you have to consider that you will essentially be able to route from your virtual network and all of its subnets to one network on your LAN and all of its subnets. So if you've got a private network that's using a 10 range, and then you've got your DMZ set up to use, you know, a 192 network, they're not going to be able to talk to each other. When you're configuring your firewalls, Cisco and Juniper are supported, and there's a list on the Azure site which will tell you what models and software versions you can use. It is possible to actually configure other firewalls or VPN endpoints such as TMG, which has been demonstrated, but they're not supported, so if you have any problem with them, you're kind of on your own. The next consideration is around Active Directory integration, whether you need to do it or not, whether you need to stick a domain controller out on the Azure service. Once you have a VPN connection set up, depending on how you set up your firewall, you could, for all intents and purposes, domain join your machines from Azure using the domain controllers on your private network. That will allow you to have authentication services for whatever you present and whatever you've got out onto the internet. The design of it's really up to your requirements, but you could stick a read-only domain controller if you wanted to. You could stick a full domain controller out there. You could stick a separate forest out there and authenticate through that. If you do domain join any PCs that are out on the Azure cloud, you will have to use your own DNS. So you can build your own DNS server on Azure, or you can point all of those servers back to your DNS servers back in your private network. So when it comes to provisioning, you can create it through literally a point and click interface on the web console, or one of the fastest and most consistent ways of doing it is using PowerShell. So when you're literally provisioning a PowerShell, a server using PowerShell, you've got plenty of options that will allow you to make the process really quick and stop you messing about. So you can literally domain join on boot, you can pre-configure IP addressing, you can set up your server names, you can configure additional disks, you can specify the size, you can tell whether it's going to have write caching enabled or disabled, and you can literally, on first boot, it's all ready to go. If you are looking at setting up domain controllers, there are some documentation on the Azure site that will help you to do that. But there are a few things that aren't documented in their entirety. So there's a couple of blogs, one's by a colleague of mine, Mark DeBlanche. And if anyone saw Michael Wation the other day, he had a couple of sessions. He's actually got a really good guide for how to do that. So the other thing you can do is once you've actually provisioned your servers, you can take snapshots of those. You can either upload an image or a virtual disk from your own Hyper-V environment, or once you've created your base level server and configured it, you can then generalize it with sysprep and you can export it to be an image and capture that. If you are capturing images and uploading them from your own Hyper-V environment on premises, you'll need to use the CS upload tool to do that. There is functionality within System Center, the latest version, Virtual Machine Manager on 2012 Service Pack 1, and that allows you to natively move those. So for me, I think I'm pretty much done. I think I'll hand back to Sharan.
Excellent. Okay. Look, happy to take any questions you may have. And not to mention, we have got some goodies to give away. Some of you may have had some T-shirts come through, so we've got more T-shirts to give away. If you've got any questions that you would like to ask from a business perspective, technology perspective, or the issues that we may have had. So, yep. I'll start with the gentleman back here. Right. I'll answer it in such a way without going to exact figures. I didn't actually have a slide on this, but our cost is basically based on 4% of the firm's revenue. So what we find is that we can actually even bring that further down, or not increase it, in other words, actually having a look at a cloud solution. So for an example, Everybody knows what roughly the cost of a server is, that even if you virtualize it, you still have to have a certain number of servers that you go to buy, and then the infrastructure behind that to set the environment up can go into easily hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what we find with the cloud solution is it's much less. And plus, it gives you to actually operationalize the cross rather than actually having a significant capital cost at the right at the beginning and trying to write it over a 3-year period. So our aim is still to stay around about 4%, which is, from an industry perspective in the financial sector, which is really, really good compared to 7.5% to 14% in some organizations. And we can very efficiently and effectively maintain below that 4% cost. That's what I can assure you of. Sorry. Look, that is a good question. That is something that we are still working through with Microsoft to figure out what is the most effective solution, and especially from SQL perspective. I mean, SQL licenses are relatively expensive, so we are trying to figure out if you are going to run active environment, what are the implications behind that. But there are a number of solutions, and also the licensing is changing with SQL for Microsoft. So it's a question we still got to answer and figure out what is the best way to go ahead and do that, so which we'll be doing. Sorry. I got two t-shirts. What size do you want? Large. John, you want to sort that out, please? The gentleman in the back end.
I think we've got extra large and two extra large.
One for you two in the back. Yep. Any other questions anybody would like to ask? Okay, look, moving along, there's also a Microsoft mouse to give away. So please complete your surveys or the feedback session, and feel free to give any positive or negative feedback, whichever you want. I hope it was positive for you and you learned something out of it. And all the presentations and other information will be on the TechEd site that you can actually access. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I know it's early on a Friday night after a big party last night. So hope you enjoy the session. Thank you very much.